Blog Talk Radio.
Ladies and gentlemen, put your hands together for
Rivalry Radio!
Rivalry Radio.
Kind of taking over the entertainment industry. And so, yeah, we're just excited to be on board with you. You know, you can find Rivalry Network at Rivalry, or you can find this show, our writers group, our radio show, all of that at Rivalry Network 1 on Facebook, Instagram, and Twitter. So just real excited to get going and headed into it all. Right now on the line with me, I have Don Dupree. He's a longtime producer of Siskel and Ebert and creator of A Piece of the Game. Excited to have him on with us today. How are you doing today, Don?
I'm doing fine. Thanks for having me on.
Yeah. You told me you're in Chicago, and I was just mentioning to the audience it's actually starting to get a little bit nicer here in Wisconsin. Did you get some of that sunshine finally down there as well?
Yeah, it's fantastic, and it was a good day for the Cubs today too.
I saw you were talking about Cubs and Cardinals tickets, and that's always an exciting matchup rivalry, I guess you would call it. I've been following the Brewers a little bit. They're doing good, so it's heating up to be a pretty decent race over there. So tell us a little bit about yourself, Don, and what I try to do when I first bring you on is give you an opportunity to talk a little bit about where we can find you on social media, Facebook, Twitter, all that good stuff.
Oh, thank you. Yeah, I have a show called A Piece of the Game that you mentioned. It's being just in Chicago right now, WCN, following 17, like the games on Sunday. It's anti-trocha for sports memorabilia. And we're in fourth year. We won a couple of Emmys, and we've had some great stories and some interesting things. Everything from a Jesse Owens medal that sold for $1.4 million to a guy that brought in Derek Jeter's Long John. So kind of covered it all. And the show is great fun. Actually, we're at an event this weekend at the Lincoln Library and Museum, Springfield. Where we're giving free evaluation, and they have a Cubs Cardinals rivalry exhibit. So we're always looking for great stuff, and hopefully we can find some more this weekend. I always say that about the show, you know, everybody in some family, somebody has something sports-related that they want to talk about, find out the price, and the rest of the family doesn't ever want to hear that story again. So we give them a venue. And but it's been great. And I started the show after your kind about Siskel and Ebert. I produced and directed that for 20 years. And sadly, when Roger passed away, I needed to find something else to do. And Roger encouraged me to start my own show. So that's kind of how we've kind of come to this. But we all missed Roger and Gene greatly. Those guys really, really were pretty special in that movie space.
Yeah, so tell me a little bit. You got so much interesting stuff going on there that I don't even know really where to start. But tell me a little bit, how did you hook up with Roger and get involved in all that? It sounds like it was a pretty amazing time that you dealt with him, you know, personally. How did that happen for you?
You know, it was out of the blue, like divine intervention. I was contacted by Disney, which syndicated the show. And whenever I interviewed with Disney, the people, they said, well, you got the job if it's our decision.
Really?
So what had happened was, if Gene liked someone, it was really a rivalry in every regard with those guys. And if Gene liked someone and wanted them to have the job, Roger thought they were siding with Gene and vice versa. So they couldn't get anyone through the two of them. And somehow, some way, I made it through and survived 20 years with it. So, but it was a rivalry from beginning to end. And they were just completely, and people would say to me all the time, it really wasn't that bad. You know, that was all for TV, right? And I'm like, oh, no, no. The best battles were off the air. So it was, really something.
It's good when you can have a relationship like that and still have a little tension. I'm sure it's great for television, right?
Yeah, it really was. I mean, the fights were so bad between them that they closed the studio. No one was allowed in the studio. There's a lot. There's some great stuff on YouTube over the years, things that got out just for the promotion sessions and different things where they would go at it. And I often would say, you know, if we could have aired those shows, it would have been tears. You know?
Right. That's awesome. So, what was your involvement in it? Actually, it sounds like you were a little bit behind the scenes, but dealing with them personally. I mean, what was your involvement? How close did you actually get to them on a personal level?
Well, I was really close with both guys. You know, being that involved with the show, you kind of are director, producer, and referee. So I was really close with both guys. And they were just very different. And one quick story, I remember my first day there, and a lot of people, I quickly realized, didn't know which was Siskel and which was Ebert. And so, and there was, you know, it's a pretty big rivalry between the two of them. And a person across Michigan Avenue, in the middle of the day, lunch, Michigan Avenue, teeming with people, a guy yelled out to Roger Ebert, "Hey, Siskel, I saw your review of whatever the movie was." And Roger tapped me on the shoulder and said, "Watch this." And Roger, you know, big crowd of people yelled back, "Yeah, well, what'd you think of that review?" And the guy yelled across, "I thought your review stunk." And Roger yells back, "Well, actually, I'm Ebert, and Siskel's review did stink." So I kind of knew what I was in for there, you know.
It sounds like as chaotic and dramatic as it could be at times, that it's still very dear in your heart. I can hear that that excitement. And when you meet people and friends like that, it's pretty hard to erase those memories. So that's something that's pretty awesome. And you said that you're actually writing your version of the story. Is that correct?
Yeah, I'm working on it. It's kind of a strange story where Roger, God rest his soul, whenever he wrote his memoir, I read it, and I thought, and I told him, he respected honesty, and, you know, so I told him, I said, "Well, it was good, but you left out all the good stuff." He was like, "Well, why don't you write your book?" I'm like, "All right." So I started working on it, but I told him at the time, the only way I'll do it is if he edits it, because I don't want people to think it's a kiss and tell book. And I worked for Oprah beforehand, too. And so I said, you know, if that'll be the case. So Roger actually edited the book. I'm probably halfway through with it. And then sadly, Roger, passed around that time. So I just picked it up again recently, and I thought, I better write it pretty soon because a lot of people remember who Roger Ebert is pretty soon. I'm getting older.
Right.
And the movie generation is getting younger. So, but it was, some great stories in there, some really great things. And Roger was a really remarkable guy. And he and Gene, I don't think anybody will ever be in movie criticism what those two guys were.
Right, absolutely. I mean, those two names, when you say it, that's what you think about, the thumbs up and the thumbs down. It's just automatic. And, I don't think you can ever replace that. But you said that he missed some of the good stories. Can you tell us your favorite one? What's the one that jumped out to you when you read his memoirs and you were like, oh, wait a minute, I was looking for this specific story and it's not in there? Do you have a certain one that jumps out at you like that?
There's probably there are a lot of them. Speaking off the top of my head, was Roger. Well, one of them that's really interesting was the fact that Roger and years ago, and they had a couple of dates, and they kept it pretty quiet. But then Oprah outed Roger on the show. And then Roger came on the show and talked about it. And one of the cool things on their date Oprah at that time was undecided. She was just in Chicago, and she was trying to determine which of the syndication deals she was going to take. And there was one deal with ABC that would have been just on the, six ABC stations, and there was another deal with King World that was on the table, which would have been across the country. And ironically, she was leaning towards taking the deal with ABC. And Roger, as he tells the story, they were at Hamburger Hamlet, his treat. Said on the napkin, he wrote down, if you go to King World, here's what you would get. And he wrote down his salary, and he said, times two, because I have to split mine with Gene. Times two, because your show will be an hour, mine's a half hour. And then he said, times four, because ours is a weekly show, yours will be, daily. And then he said, and then he drew a line and added it all up, and he pushed it towards it. He goes, that's what you'll make if you go to King World. She says, I'm going to King World. So she would always say that Roger made her a lot of money on their date. And my line to both of them was, couldn't you have just saved me the napkin? Can you imagine what that would be worth on eBay?
Yeah, crazy, huh?
Yes, it really is. And then, one more Roger King story. You want one more?
Yeah, absolutely. You can keep going.
Gene did the show. I was amazed until 2 weeks before he passed. And he had brain tumor and great guy. But he did the show until 2 weeks before he passed. And he literally... I had to help him on the set. We didn't know he was that close to the end. But so Gene did the show, and he and Roger was trying to be nice to Gene during the show, but they got into a huge fight over the word gauntlet and the pronunciation of it. One word could set him off, and that was the word that day. So it set him off, and Roger blew up, Gene blew up, and I just said over the loudspeaker, guys, for a while, and let's cool off, and we'll pick this up in a couple of minutes. Gene, with help, walks into the control room where I was, and on the screen on the monitors, you could still see he walks in and he's behind me and he's looking at the monitors the entire time. And you could see Roger still pacing around the set, still yelling about it. And Gene, 2 weeks before he passed, I said to him, I said, Gene, I said, we're not going to do the show until start up until you're ready. Are you okay? And Gene, on cue, still looking at the monitor, said, and pointed at Roger and said, oh, I'm all right, but there's something seriously wrong with that guy. I'm like, wow.
All over the word gauntlet.
All over the word gauntlet, yeah. And then they used to do the thing where whenever the people would introduce Roger, he'd keep this from front of Gene. They would say, well, people get you guys mixed up. And Roger would say, yes. Here's what all you need to know, though. One of us is fat. He points to himself. One of us is thin. Point to Gene. One of us has hair. He points to himself. One of them doesn't. One of us is short. Point to himself. And then one of us is tall. One of us has a Pulitzer. Point to himself. And one of us doesn't.
That's awesome.
Yeah, so
and it sounds like it reminds me of my grandpa and grandma, where just that bittersweet love hatred, you know, you can't stand them, but you can't live without them. You know what I mean?
Oh yeah, so I think that was it. And there were times too that which really. This one's a little off color, but early on in the screenings, you put the screenings with them, and there'd be other people, other critics in the room, you know, maybe 50 critics watching. And anytime, an ongoing joke, anytime an actress, you know, walked on the screen, stars from Roger.
Oh, that's good. It sounds like you had a great 20 years of your life.
Yeah, it was a great thing to be part of. A lot of great memories, and we really miss those guys. They were both really terrific guys.
So you brought up Oprah a couple different times. Did you actually get to meet her personally?
Yeah, Oprah, I worked with Oprah in Baltimore and then kind of followed her to Chicago. So I used to know Oprah before she was really Oprah. And, you know, to show you, you know, how dim-witted I am, when she left Baltimore, she offered me her car. And I'm like, well, why do I need that car? You know, and I'm thinking, what would that be worth today? So,
right.
So she has always been.
I like the way you think now that you have this piece of the game show, the value of the napkin in the car, and it's really crazy how American society is really built around that. We love our memorabilia, and we love, especially, I would almost imagine that the napkin would be worth more than the car. Because of the quirky values that it has of it. What do you think about that? And I think I may have lost Don right now, but that was a very interesting conversation. I'm going to try to get him back on the line and finish up with him. We are coming close to the end of his segment, but, good stuff right there. Are you with me, Don?
Yeah, I've got you. Sorry about that.
Oh, it's okay. It's okay. So I was saying, you know, with everything that you got with the memorabilia, it sounds like your mind has kind of tuned into that. And I was saying, you brought up the napkin and the value of the napkin and the value of the car. It almost seems like in the society in America, we're obsessed and we love memorabilia. And in my mind, I'm almost guessing that people would favor the napkin over the car because of the quirky value of it.
I think so.
You know what I'm saying?
Yeah.
What is it that drives Americans to that kind of obsession with celebrities and the things that they've touched and owned and all that kind of stuff?
I don't know, but speaking of Roger, there's some truth to it. It's like there's something about celebrities, especially celebrities that, he usually used to think, like, you know, at the time he would say, you know, if he met Tom Hanks, or if somebody met Tom Hanks, it was Tom Hanks. But if you met John Wayne, it was John Wayne. So
right.
There's, you know, it's almost like stars have to.
You're fading out on me again, Don. But it's a very interesting topic. And I think, especially with the sports memorabilia part of it, because growing up, I was really into baseball cards, and they were actually worth a lot back then. I don't know, and I hope we can get you back closer again where I can hear you and you can hear me, because I'd like to hear your opinion on baseball collectibles and the cards and all that. Because when I was young, there was kind of a frenzy over it, and that's before they were mass produced. so, you know, we could go out and buy a pack of Tops or Donruss or, you know, that for just a couple of dollars at the most. Well, I think it's even less than that because some of them started coming out then that were, you know, $1.99 and they kind of blew our minds. But now they're everywhere and very, very popular. And not only now are you buying baseball cards, but you get Pokemon and all that other kind of stuff. And they don't carry quite the value that they do anymore. But I remember being young and, you know, everybody was talking about if you could get your hands on a Joe DiMaggio or a Mickey Mantle or any of that. And the closest I ever came was a Ken Griffey Jr. Rookie card, but I believe I had the wrong one because it was one that was really, really popular back then and worth a lot of money, and I believe the one I have is Donruss. I've misplaced my card, so I'll have to try to find them again. But are you with us again, Don?
I am. Sorry about that.
It's okay. It's okay. It's kind of a hazard of the business. Phones go in and out nowadays. But we're just glad to have you on. No. It's not that big of a deal. Well, I'm glad to have you on, and I was just talking about how the value of baseball cards has changed so much. I don't know if that's something you actually deal with, but I had a Ken Griffey Jr. rookie card back in the day, and I just thought that was going to make me millions. But they've kind of faded off recently as cards have been mass-produced.
Right. Yeah, it really is. It's changed dramatically. And I'm sorry that King Griffey's not worth what it is. I've had many people come to me with King Griffey cards. They felt the same thing.
And I wonder why it never did. I mean, he had a great career. He was one of the more upstanding from that era, if I'm not mistaken, and, you know, played very, very good ball. And, I mean, he came into the league already with the pedigree and all that kind of stuff. So why did his memorabilia never top out like we thought it would?
I don't know. I mean, it's a good question. But, you know, it seems like after the 70s, this part kind of peaked in the 70s, I think. And so I'm not sure. But, you know, the thing we keep running into is, you know, is everybody had a valuable card, but their mother threw out their collection. You know, they just had that collection and wanted to talk to their mother about that. So I run into that daily.
Right. What would if you could have any piece of sports memorabilia? Is there one that you would love to have?
Oh well, I tell you, a couple that are on my mind that I'd like to have. They're coming up for auction here pretty soon. Actually, this month is Babe Ruth's 1927 World Series championship ring is being auctioned off. Charlie Sheen is the owner of it, of all people. I think that's like the Holy Grail. And
right.
And then, so that would be one that would be right at the top for me, you know. So,
cool.
So that would be up there. And then the other one, another one's coming up for sale. It's pretty good. Is yet another one of Jesse Owens' gold medals from the 36th Olympics.
Oh wow!
Yeah.
I wonder what the. What makes people want to put those things up for sale? Is it usually necessity, or they just want to move on from it, or, you know, are they're trying to figure out the real value? What would make someone want to move such a valuable piece?
What happens for the most part is if it's not someone from the family and it's gone to a second owner, a lot of times, you know, when the price just becomes, they think the price has peaked, they will usually still go with that. You know, but if it's still in the family, it winds up staying longer. So those are really a couple of determining factors. And I think right now, because the sports movie market is so hot, you know, people are looking to cash in right now.
Right, right. And it's such a strange market because it can go way up and way down. And it fluctuates even. I mean, they always say, like, if you have a piece of memorabilia, you want to wait until the player does something exciting that puts them in the spotlight or they retire or something like that. Have you found that to be true?
Yeah, I think that's true. And what had happened that there are players that are like that we've had a lot with. And we get a lot of times, in a kind of a sad way, is whenever someone passes, like especially Muhammad Ali passed, does that increase the value and that? And so I think what you see a lot of times is whenever someone like that, when something like that happens, people will want to cash in. So see examples of that.
Great. So I would imagine that this year when the Cubs won the World Series would have been a good time for somebody to move to Steve Bartman foul ball.
Yeah. You know, exactly. But it's been blown up. Harry Carey's in town here blew it up to get rid of the curse. And I don't think Cubs have ever forgiven them for it. They bought the ball for an exorbitant price. It seems like it was over, it might have been thousands of dollars. And then they blew it up in a kind of a hype event. So the Bartman ball is no more. And I think the Cubs are still pretty miffed about the whole thing.
Wow. Well, it sounds like you and I could go on, on and on and on about this, but it's exciting stuff, and I love sports and all that. So, you said that Roger gave you the idea to start a show. What made you pick this one specifically, as far as memorabilia? What was it that turned on the light bulb, and that's what you knew you were going to do?
I just always liked sports, and I hadn't done a sports show. I'd done talk shows, I'd done movie shows, I've been in news. So I just thought the sports thing would be fun, and had the luxury of being able to try it. And for me, one of the things I like about it is just about how fanatical sports fans can be about stuff. I find it interesting and almost – and very entertaining because, it's one of those things that people are so close to. And I think the reason for that is it evokes so many memories of childhood. You know, I was with my dad whenever I got this ball.
Right.
In summer and, warm and memories. So I think that that to me is what makes the memorabilia thing really interesting.
That makes a lot of sense, especially a lot of my memories. My dad actually passed when I was 11, and he was the one that got me into baseball. And so anytime, like you just said, anytime I, start to smell that fresh-cut green grass in the spring or drive by a stadium or even see a logo of a team, it's always those warm memories of him. I actually grew up in Brazil. He was a missionary to Brazil.
Wow.
So he wanted me to learn and know baseball even in a foreign country. So he brought over everything and taught me how to play. And when we came back over here, it just so happened to be World Series time, and we listened to 1984 World Series between the Tigers and the Padres on a staticky old AM radio. Made it through it and heard it. And the one card that I – speaking of baseball cards, the one card that I had that I recognized in there was Lance Parrish. And never forget that day.
Great,
I was 8 years old, So
yeah, great third baseman. Yeah, and that's case in point. That's a perfect example. Yeah, that's great. What a great memory.
Right. And I think that's why it becomes worth so much to us, because of the memories. But, hey, I want to thank you so much, Don, for coming on. This has been a great conversation. You have so many interesting experiences. You've lived an amazing life, and glad to hear a little bit about it. Hopefully we can get you on again one of these days and talk a little bit more. But tell us what you got planned here, anything exciting, and once again, let us know where we can learn more about you on social media or whatever you want to say to the audience as you go.
Yo, thanks. You can reach us at apieceofthegame.tv, we update the show. And we're hoping to get a national deal to have the show out. But most of all, thank you.
Awesome. Well, yeah, thank you for coming on. Enjoy the beautiful weather there. I hope your Cubs do good, but not too good, because my Brewers are actually fighting pretty hard out there. But should be a great summer and some great baseball, and we'll talk to you soon, my friend. All right, and that was Don Dupree. And as you can tell, full of amazing memories and some pretty exciting stuff there. He's produced for Siskel and Ebert for 20 years and telling us a little bit there that the fights that we saw were just the tip of the iceberg, that that was actually their complete relationship. And that he actually got to rub shoulders with Oprah. Pretty amazing. I wanted to ask him a little bit more about that. We hear so much about Oprah and you see a side of her. I wanted to ask him how much of that was actually true. But unfortunately, these segments only last a half hour, and I usually run out of time before I run out of conversation. But we do have our next caller on the line, and I'm very excited to talk to Patty Heffernan. Her and I have known each other for a while through Facebook and shared some interesting stories, and I'm excited to hear what she has for us today. Patty, how are you doing today?
I'm pretty good, thanks. How are you?
Oh, I'm doing tremendous. I was just telling Don, he's down in Chicago, and it finally hit 80 degrees here in my part of Wisconsin anyway. I don't know how it is where you're at, but starting to look like summer, and that means that we don't have to put up with that bitter cold for at least a few more months. So that always makes me excited.
Yeah, it's 90 degrees here today, too, so that was nice.
That's awesome, and I love it because now as soon as I start getting a little bit of taste of spring or summer, I go out and fire up the grill. So I've been doing that every day, and as soon as the show's done, I'm going to go throw some more steaks on. Tell us a little bit about the things that you're involved on Facebook. If there's anything you want us to see about you, I always give my guests an opportunity to talk about where they can find you on Facebook, Twitter, anything that you got going on, any web pages. I know you're involved in quite a few different things. Is there any specific ones you would like us to check out?
Yeah, right now I've been working with another amazing woman who does a lot of spoken word art. And right now her thing that she's doing is called I'm Tellin'. It's actually an event that's going on tonight, and I declined to be a part of it so I could do this radio interview, but I promised I would plug it for her. And that's you can look up ReneeBeezy.com and find it that way, and many of her other gifts. Another thing that we're doing right now, and this one's a little close to my heart because my mom struggles with this, with mental illness. There's the 1 million Mohawks for Mental Health going on right now, and it was for the month of May, but we had such a pushback and so much amazing response from it that it's going to continue to go on. And what we're doing is it's a little bit like the Ice Bucket Challenge. You spike your hair up in a mohawk, even just for a picture. If you don't have any hair, just paint a strip on your head. You can't shave your head because of work. Find a banana clip. That always helps, too. You snap a picture. You use your hashtag, a 1 million mohawks, and then you challenge three other people to do the same thing. It's to start those conversations that are so scary for people who deal with mental illness because there's still so much stigma around it. So those are two of the big things I'm doing right now.
And that's very interesting to me, and I know that's something that we discussed with some of the other topics we might talk about that, it might not come up. But it's something I'm actually very curious about because there are quite a few people that I'm close to that have dealt with mental illness, and it actually runs in one side of my family. What are some of the things that we can do to help those people, because I know sometimes it can be a silent disease, and it can be something that you look at someone and you know that there's something different about them, but you can't put your finger on it. So it tends to be something that people really, really get judged for. How can we help expose that, and how can we identify it without being invasive?
Well, that's a really good question. There's so many things. So let me collect my thoughts a second. I guess, what we can learn the most from Winnie the Pooh, really. I mean, if you think about it, Eeyore is always down. He's always depressed. He's always looking at the glass half full or completely empty the way that he sees it a lot. But you know what? His friends never tell him to snap out of it. His friends keep inviting him along anyway. They just love him unconditionally. And I think that that's a really great thing. I mean, it's very simple and it's kind of cute, because it's Winnie the Pooh. But, one in four people struggle with mental illness. And the way that I see this is that, you know, one person may have the actual disease, but three other people love that person. So this is something that affects everyone. And I guess,
right.
Yeah, asking that person, what do you need? Do you just need someone to listen to you ramble right now until you solve your own problem? Do you need more care? You know, there's a lot of different trainings that people can go through too. And even if you just go to your local hospital and ask about, most of the time they have free classes about different mental illness and how to help whoever it is that you love. But, you know, don't ever say things like, you know, just get over it, or why can't you pull it together, or why are you so obsessed about this mental disease? I don't know. It's almost like you have a mental disease that's in your head, and it affects every single part of your life, because that's the way it is. You can't think yourself out of a problem that's in your head, and that's where people need their loved ones to understand that, you know, it's not that they're stupid. They're highly intelligent. Many, many people that are highly intelligent and well-known struggle with mental illness. Carrie Fisher, Vincent Van Gogh, Robin Williams, just to name a few. People that we all know and love and maybe not know personally, but these are all people who have struggled for years with mental illness. And unfortunately, in the end, they died because of it. So it is preventable. And as long as we can just love and support people and not expect that they have to change to get our love and support, I'd say that that's probably the best way to help somebody that you care about.
Well, and one of the things I want to point out about what you just said is, you know, you brought up Carrie Fisher, someone who's pretty much a legend in science fiction, Robin Williams, who's made every one of us laugh. You can't even say his name without getting a smile on your face and feeling that warmness in your heart that he apparently never felt. And Vincent Van Gogh, you know, who made beautiful art and didn't even know that he's famous, because he passed before he even had a chance to realize how much people admired his art. I remember reading a story about him that he was getting towards the end, and he didn't feel like he could live anymore. So he made just enough money to buy a gun, and as soon as the rest of the money was gone, he was going to take his life. So, but these are very influential people, and when we think of mental illness, we automatically judge, and we automatically think of, you know, someone that they're crazy, or you know, that they're a negative, that they're a pariah, something with a negative influence on our culture. But actually, some of the people that deal with it the worst are the most brilliant and amazing people in our culture. And I think that's something to consider, especially also when you consider that one-fourth of the population, that means, you know, an average family is four people. That means that in almost every family, there's going to be someone dealing with mental illness. And so it's more common than we really think it is. And
absolutely.
And people with mental illnesses that are more normal than we actually think they are.
Yes, absolutely. I mean, it's no different than somebody who's got to treat themselves with insulin because they're diabetic. If somebody is diabetic, nobody says, why don't you just stop that so you can have a cookie? Nobody says that to somebody with diabetes, right? You know?
Right.
And it's difficult because sometimes mental illness can look like spending exorbitant amounts of money and being completely broke, or it can also look like being very promiscuous, and then, you know, we want to judge people that way too, completely isolated and hiding in your house all the time. It really depends on the person. But my point is that, you know, the people who have it, they didn't ask for this. They didn't decide one day that they were going to do this. I mean, no different than somebody decides to have a heart attack. If somebody has a heart attack, you know, they don't go, well, you shouldn't have been eating all those burgers or something. You know, nobody says that. So, I mean, why would we expect it to be any different with something that is a mental disease? You know, I mean, our brain is simply an organ just like the rest of our bodies, and we can accept that the other parts of our bodies fail. But when it comes to our minds, our culture still really has this idea that, you know, mind over matter is a sign of strength, and if you can't do that, then you're weak or worthless. And that's one of the reasons that we are putting out a big public movement like this, to start those conversations and to get rid of that stigma. The U-Rock Foundation is a big part of that, and what they do is they talk to big-name musicians and TV personalities and get them to open up about the things that they are. Corey Taylor from Slipknot is another big pusher of the Million Mohawks for mental health. Or I'm sorry, not from Slipknot. Right now he's working in the Stone Sour Project. There's quite a few others that Killswitch Engage got involved, Roadrunner Records, Jonathan Davis of Korn. So it's gaining some momentum, and I really think that we have an opportunity to do something really great with our culture with it.
That sounds awesome, and I'm glad that they chose the Mohawk thing, because to me that's a perfect description. Because in my mind, from the people that I've experienced that have dealt with it, I have an uncle that was actually a genius and a brilliant man, but just could never get right upstairs. And because of that, there was a lot of criticism given to him. But anytime I met him, he was just a warm and caring and an amazing person. But harshly judged through his life. But I know that a lot of it came not directly from him. It came from other sources of people expecting things from him or anything like that. So, in a lot, I think that kind of blame these people for this illness, but it's usually coming from the people around them that are expecting things from them or forcing things on them that cause them to be this way. But I like the Mohawk because it kind of shows that and all the things that you brought up, the eating disorder and the brown obscurity and all that kind of stuff, is just, it's a cry for help. It's them saying, you know, all I want is attention and love and care. And so the Mohawk to me is a pretty neat and special thing for that, because if we can all learn to give them attention and to learn to care for them in the unique way that they need it, I think we can actually make a huge difference in this and change it.
Yeah, absolutely. I agree. Yeah.
Cool.
Mohawk is awesome because, I mean, the catchphrase that they've got is spike your hair in a mohawk to start a conversation about the brain beneath it. So, yeah, that's just basically what we're trying to do.
Right. Absolutely. Do you have, like, a hotline number or anything like that for someone? If there is someone that's in need and, you know, needs to contact someone, or can you give us advice on how, you know, if you're feeling at the end of your rope, what you can do to alleviate that?
Yeah, the number is different in every state, but I promise you, if you just punch into Google crisis hotline or suicide prevention hotline, there will be a number right at the top that will apply to the state and city that you're in.
Cool. And, I don't know if it's always been like this, but at least in my life, I've been affected by suicide. It seems like every time I turn the corner, one of the guys I deal with every day, his brother just took his own life, and it's such a horrible thing. But one of the things I've learned is that people's first reaction to suicide is to try to guilt people into not doing it, and I think that actually is counterproductive and has the opposite effect on it. We should be very understanding. I'm sure all of us have had that moment when we'd rather not be alive. And being understanding of people, I think, goes a lot farther than criticism and judgment. So, and the other thing I've learned from the people I've dealt with is, if you're feeling this issue, it's not a bad idea to go in and talk to a doctor and or a counselor. And just have them talk you down from the ledge a little bit. But so, Patty, tell us a little bit about else what you have going on. I know that you are working with the music project, and you have some other stuff going on. What are your ambitions, and what drives you, and where do you see yourself headed here in the future with all that?
Well, I'm a mother of four, so my options are limited, but not impossible. I was recently working on a project. It was Beyond the Barricade, but we were just having some creative differences, what one of the members wanted was not something that I could really do. And we worked with it for a while, but when it came down to it, it was just, we were just too different. So we kind of split up and went our different ways. I have been working on a new project. Right now it's only me and one other person. So if there's anybody out there, find me on my Facebook page. If you're a musician that can learn songs quickly, hit me up. I'm working on a new project called Siren Joan and the Amazing Doom Raptors. And it's really just, it's a little bit thrash. It's a whole lot of fun is what it is. I'm not a musician that wants to take myself super serious. I'm just not about that. I need to be having fun when I'm up there. I need to be able to laugh and say silly things. And I find that I write music the most easily when I'm just being absolutely ridiculous. And that's when the project's just lines up and it happens really well. So that's something that I'm trying to get up and off the ground. I'm having some trouble getting people who, I don't know, maybe not share the same vision, but we have a lot of schedule conflicts. So I'm open and I'll keep finding some people for that. So absolutely hit me up on my Facebook page on Patty Heffernan. That's all I've got so far because technology sort of scares me, and I tried to put together a fan page and it was just a disaster. So I'll probably rely on somebody a little bit more professional to help me do that.
Well, you know, if people want to hit up the show and I'll transfer that information on to you, but that sounds really cool. I actually, as far as I know, punk isn't quite what it was back in the day when I was growing up, but I'm glad that somebody's still keeping it alive. And music is always better when it's fun, like you said, seriously. I know that this generation is, into technology and open-mindedness as they are, they've kind of gotten away from the fun in their entertainment the way that we used to have it when we were young. But hopefully somebody can bring that back because you can't really beat some of that old school punk and all that good stuff. So I'm glad that you're still working on that. Now we have a few minutes left, and I know that you are always really, really excited about zombies. So I want to hear a little bit about that.
I am.
tell us a little bit about zombies. Your obsession.
Okay, so I was on a Discovery Channel documentary for zombie preppers. It's a zombie apocalypse. This is a couple years ago now, and two children ago. Got surprised with twins after that. But
wow.
So first of all, I have to say that when you watch this, please, everybody know that this is very, very edited. And like the one line in that I get famous for the most, and I can see it on my face when I watch it going, oh my God, I can't believe these words are falling out of my mouth. I said, even my daughter knows we only shoot zombies in the head. And that is the one that everybody was just all about. I get cited in different articles and stuff as saying that. And like, oh man, I'm like, oh. What kind of parent am I? When I said that on camera. But it was a lot of fun. And really, I got involved with that because, growing up has not been easy for me. And I like to be a disaster planner. And my motto always was that if you're ready for zombies, you're ready for anything. And, anything from the unstable politics going on in the world to, just a tornado, a flood disaster. I'm just a planner. So, I keep 3 months worth of food for my family, which for six people is a lot. You know, extra clothes, flashlights, and kind of a bug out bag in case we would ever have to leave our home. And I know in the States, like, that's not really a reality for a lot of people. Well, for most of our country, really, we've been very, very fortunate to never really have to fight a war on our home turf. So, but for me, I've had to fight some different kinds of wars on my own. And I guess now that I'm in a spot that, you know, things have settled down and my life is stable, I still just feel more secure knowing that, you know, that stuff is there should I ever need it. So that's really more what this is about.
I think it's a great idea, actually. It's something my mind doesn't actually work that way. And I also have a family of six. I think we would be extreme zombie bait if an apocalypse ever happened. But it's not a bad idea to be prepared for that, especially with everything being hooked up to technology. Now, they say if someone found a way to derail the internet, we would all just, in a matter of hours, it would be chaos all across the country. So as dependent as we've become on technology, it's not a bad idea to have all that stuff stored up and ready. And I actually think that that's really cute. I think you have nothing to be ashamed of with the line about your daughter shooting zombies in the head, because zombies have pretty much taken over our culture. I know when I was younger and growing up, it was just kind of something people talked about and laughed about. But now we are a generation obsessed with zombies and aliens. So it's, you know, it's not that not that crazy to believe anymore. So do you have a favorite
zombie? It's actually not. I mean, when I talk to people, you know, and I especially when I was a lot more involved in it, like leading up to the documentary, like, I would say, yeah, I'm prepared for zombies. And I'd be like, you give me 5 minutes. You talk to me for 5 minutes and you will be preparing for zombies too. And that's usually the case. I mean, because with the technology that we do have now, I mean, viruses mutate all the time anyway. Like, if you've ever, like, passed the same cold back and forth between you and your kid or, you know, somebody at work, it's because every time a virus, you know, it finds a host, it mutates a little bit from our DNA, and then, you know, it can be passed back to you because it's not the same, so your body won't recognize it, and you'll end up getting sick again. So I know that there's a lot of study in this, and I hope it's for the highest benefit of humanity to be mutating diseases to make vaccines more easy. But, I mean, say something like rabies is usually the one that I can use that most people have heard of. But say like something like rabies mutated to a way where it could live in a human host without killing it as quickly as it usually does. So you'd have people walking around that are hydrophobic, that are foaming at the mouth, that are completely erratic, no longer recognize their family members, don't react to pain. Doesn't that kind of sound like a zombie? Like, no, it's not like digging yourself out of the grave, but, I mean, it's a thing that can happen. And there's so many more diseases and so many more viruses that are kept. And I know that there are tons and tons of protocols. But when the CDC puts out a zombie plan, it kind of makes you think for a second that this might be something that I needed to pay attention to. So, I don't know. I just always loved zombie flicks, and the more I learned about it and the science behind it, like, I just kind of became obsessed for a while. I've backed off quite a bit, but it's really fascinating. And my favorite comic book forever was The Walking Dead. I can't watch the show anymore because they've just totally destroyed my childhood with the way they've changed the show, and I'm bitter. But that's just me personally.
Right. Well, I actually have followed it pretty closely up until this season, and my wife and I usually wait for it to come out, you know, on Netflix or whatever to watch it so we can sit down and knock it all out at once. But, well, yeah, about halfway through the first episode this time, I had my son sitting on my lap, my little baby, and I just thought, I don't even want to think that way, you know, as far
right?
as the
thing
you're putting them to. And so I just shut it. I told my wife, yeah, we're not going to watch this anymore, and I shut it off. But it is a great show, if you're willing to let your mind go to those places to see what you would be willing to do to survive in an apocalypse, it's very interesting, and can capture all your attention. And there's some very, very interesting characters, and I think that's what's exciting about it, is you can really get pulled into those. I mean, everybody loved Daryl and Michonne and those guys, but all around them, Carol is, you know, just a very interesting people. I think they've taken it a little bit too far now. Now it's not about zombies anymore. It's just about absolute human insanity.
Yeah, and that was actually one of the things that drew me to the comic book, is that it wasn't just about, what do you do in a horde of zombies, but it's like it tests the human element, you know, who are you? There were certain characters, and I was so sad that they killed them off right away, like they killed Dale in the first season on the show, and that was where I was like, no, I'm not watching this anymore. But he was the guy all through so many episodes of the comic book that would remind everybody, you know, what are we surviving for if we're not going to be a human, you know, if we're going to be right. killing machines just like them, then what are we? And there's just so many other subtexts to it. And they challenge things like race and gender identity and gender equality, and they tackled so much of it in a really amazing way and entertaining way, because, I mean, hey, zombies, you've got my attention. So I guess that's kind of why I'm a comic book nerd in the first place, is because comic books always have had a way of challenging like the political ideas of the time in a usually unpopular opinion sort of way, but they would just say, hey, we're comic books, we don't take it seriously
right.
anyway. I mean, that's what right. X-Men was all about too.
Yeah,
so
that's actually some of the stories that they're coming out with that are pretty phenomenal too. I think Marvel has done a wonderful job of bringing that stuff out. And I see that you actually do quite a bit of character impersonation. Is that something that you get into on a higher level, or just for fun?
I think you mean cosplay. Yes, I take my costumes very seriously. I think Halloween's always been my favorite, because you just can dress up and play a character for the day. If it were up to me, and I could live the lifestyle to do so, I would wear costumes every single day of the year. Last year we were, my whole family were different X-Men. My twins were the Scarlet Witch and Emma Frost, and no, not dressed like Emma Frost. It was just a version of a two-year-old version of Emma Frost that's appropriate. My oldest daughter was one of the newer X-Men, which was Pixie. My son was Iceman. My husband was Cyclops, and I was Mystique. And yes, I painted myself very blue. It was a lot of fun.
Yeah, I've actually seen that picture on your profile, and that's what Mystique is a very interesting character to me, and I think it's kind of crazy, because as they go from the old X-Men, where you were just getting used to all those characters and really liking them as they are, now they've switched into new people playing mm-hmm. those characters. And it's taking me a little bit time to get used to Jennifer Lawrence in blue, but, I actually enjoy where they're going with it right now, so we'll see what happens. But
what got me about Mystique, though, was that they kind of turned her into this damsel in distress. And it wasn't as much the actress as, I'm sorry, but Mystique has just never been a good guy. She's just not. And she's certainly not a damsel in distress, which is a problem that
right.
I've had with a lot of my female heroes that I've seen come out on the big screen. So I'm excited to see what they do with Wonder Woman, because she is like one of my all-time favorites, and I will just be devastated if they make her all damsel-y.
Well, I actually wrote an article about it, and people are saying that, critics are actually saying that this is maybe the best movie ever. And that, to me, is pretty crazy. Yeah, especially, you know, first of all, an action movie, and then a superhero-based action movie, and then a female superhero-based action movie, because they were talking about, in a lot of the research I did for the article, they were talking about how nobody has ever put a lot of money into a female-based superhero action movie, but after putting out 19 movies, they finally decided to go all in on Wonder Woman, and it seems like they did a very, very good job. It's getting a lot of controversy because of the Israeli-born actress and that kind of stuff, but it seems like it's really really hit a peak. Right? It seems like it's really hitting a peak there. And you and I have talked about gender equality, and I know that in a lot of areas still is a struggle, but it seems like in the entertainment industry, women are actually starting to really gain a foothold. I remember when I was young and in the sports side of it, if you saw a woman talking about sports, it was a complete novelty. And now there's so many, and there's not really a difference anymore. You don't even really see, well, okay, this is a female announcer anymore. And I'm hoping the same thing is happening very soon in the movie industry. And if you end up having a female-led action movie become one of the best movies ever, I think that there's a good chance that that'll happen.
Well, I certainly hope that it will gain momentum because, I mean, most of the time women in movies are either eye candy villains or the love interest of the lead character. And there's only been a few times where it's been especially frustrating for me. And most of that has been in the comic book movies because I grew up reading these and going, wow, these women are amazing. Like, I want to be like that. And getting so excited to see them on the big screen. And then finding, like, Gamora, for example. I'm sorry, but Star-Lord would have never been an interest for her. She would have just killed him. She would have. She was a cold-hearted assassin. And Black Widow, a love interest of anybody, really, and least of all Hulk. I was really, really disappointed to see that. I was so happy with her character until I started to see some of that because I thought Scarlett Johansson was just amazing in that role. But I was really, really disappointed the last time when she started to become a love interest was more part of her story than her role as a really badass assassin.
Yeah, and I've noticed that they've done that, and that's the bad thing about, like you said, comic books. Actually usually push the envelope the other way because, like you said, they're comic books and they can do it and nobody takes them serious anyways. But now that Marvel and DC and, all that is starting to hit pop culture, now they have to romanticize it a little bit, and it's probably going to piss off, the purists and the people that, have followed this from a young age, and like you, I mean, it sounds like to you, you actually have a relationship with these people, and you know their personalities, and I think that that's where the intrigue is in all of this. But then the people that just go and watch it, for fun and entertainment, they would rather see the romanticism, and you're saying, well, wait a minute, that's not how that person would actually act. So I think that that's the fine line that they have to walk on that. But I think with Wonder Woman, from what I've read, the only major change that they made in that is that they changed it from World War II to World War I because they thought that her role and her niche would be carved out a little bit better on that. So I think that's pretty cool.
Spoilers.
I'm hoping they kept it.
I'm going tomorrow to see it.
Yeah, and I'm actually thinking about going this way. I got a busy weekend, but I would actually like to go see it and write a review on how it actually turns out. But that's awesome. So, have you ever actually dressed up and gone to Comic-Con or anything like that, or is it just something you do, on your own around the house, or how far have you actually got into that?
Well, I haven't gotten to Comic-Con yet. It's a goal of mine. I went a while back. There was like this inkling that I might be able to get on a panel for zombies at Comic-Con, but it just didn't ever materialize, which would have been amazing because I would absolutely love to. But some of the smaller comic book conventions, and there's even, I guess for Wisconsin it's big, but there's a bigger one in Wisconsin, in Milwaukee. And I hit those up whenever I can, you know, between sick children or career stuff or taking care of a house. You know, unfortunately I have to live in this world, even though I don't think I was made for it. I'm pretty sure I was made for the comic books, but I get there as soon as I can. Yeah. And I do, I make my costumes. I think it's way better than the store-bought ones. When I put them together myself, because usually then they stay together. They don't fall apart like some of the store-bought ones. So, I'm a diehard.
It's kind of funny. I wanted to go back to you a little bit about what we were talking about, the zombies, because it's kind of funny. I actually was friends with this guy who all he ever wanted to talk about was zombies, and I actually got him into Walking Dead. He was into zombies even before Walking Dead, and I got him into that, and mm-hmm. that's all he wanted to talk about. And one time he said to me, you know what I hate about this world? And I said, no, I don't. He said, there's never actually going to be a zombie apocalypse, and that just bothers me. A very highly intelligent person. And I said to him, well, why don't you go create a virus, and then you can have your zombies? Well, I was joking. But he took me serious, and he actually came back to me a few months later and broke down how he was going to create this virus. And here I'm thinking, no wonder the guy can't stand living in this normal world. He actually is smart enough to create a zombie virus, and he's living in a normal world. But so if you ever see an actual zombie breakout, it might indirectly be my fault, and I apologize in advance. But it's kind of crazy the level that he took it to. But the other thing I was going to say is, back to comic books real quick, is there seems to be this obsession with Harley Quinn. And oddly enough, I've never watched a movie. I don't know why.
Okay.
I've never been a huge fan of the Joker. I'm not a huge fan of villains. I'm trying to become one because I know there's a Venom movie coming out. But what's the
mm-hmm.
obsession with Harley Quinn? Why are people so...
Okay.
in love with her.
All right, so let's talk about Harley Quinn, all right? Because I see it all over Facebook. I want a relationship like Joker and Harley Quinn. I'm here to tell you that if you want to develop Stockholm Syndrome with your verbally, emotionally, and physically abusive captor and paint your face up and get all crazy, like, remember we talked about mental illness later? There's help for that. So... Harley Quinn first appeared in the cartoons, the Warner Brothers cartoons, in the 90s. And she was just like a funny side bit character. But girls were so excited to be represented as a villain. Like, she just kept gaining more and more momentum. And, I mean, for a comic book character, she is so funny and she's so cute. And, also incredibly dangerous, because I also think that there is this dichotomy that girls can either be tomboys or they can be pretty girls, and that there's nothing in between, right? And
right.
Harley Quinn kind of shatters that. I mean, because she's adorable. Look at her. She's gorgeous. But she's also got 5 doctorates. She's incredibly intelligent, and she's badass. I mean, she takes on Batman, for crying out loud. So, I mean, she doesn't usually win, but nobody really does, Batman. But
right.
still, I mean, she does it. And there's lots of other people that she's gone toe-to-toe with and come out on top in the comic book world. So I guess it's just like this great mesh of beauty and spunky and just totally tough and can hang with all the boys. And you know, I think that's what most girls want. But, I mean, when you look a little bit deeper, it's really
right.
really scary to me that somebody would say that they would actually want to be like that. I'm good. I'll watch them. They're really entertaining, but I'm good with the marriage that I've got. Like, I'm good with it being nothing like that.
Yeah, like I said, didn't really know anything about it. And on Halloween, there was quite a few girls in the neighborhood dressed up like her, and I asked my wife, who is that? And she said Harley Quinn. Obviously, she knew, and she hates comic books. And that kind of stuff.
Aww.
So the fact that she knows, I'm just saying the fact that she knows shows that it is a very popular character. If my wife knows who Harley Quinn is, she's got to be pretty popular.
Yeah.
But the one thing that I just researched, and I'm actually disappointed in her, this whole time I thought the actress was Joy from My Name is Earl, and I was wrong.
I thought that too, but it's totally not.
And
I had an argument with my
like
husband about it.
Oh, did you really?
Yeah, I did.
It looks just
I was
like
wrong.
It.
I really thought it was. She does. She does. If you put
and
the pictures up side by side, they
perfect.
Do look. Yeah. Yeah. yeah, she would have. And I was like, yeah, but that's not quite her. I don't know. Hollywood changes people, but no, it's not. And I'm so terrible at remembering actors and actresses' names. I'm really bad at that. But my husband knows, like, all the stuff. Like, everybody. Like he met them. Well, some of the people he has. But I'm so terrible. Like, if I ever did get super famous, like, the super famous people would hate me because I just wouldn't know who they are. I'm so mad at that. I'm terrible at that.
Yeah, Joy is actually played by Jamie Presley. And that I thought for sure that when I looked it up, that's who I was going to see, but I didn't. So it's Margot Robbie.
Oh, gosh, I love Joy.
Yeah, and I think that this actress, when she's made up like Harley Quinn, looks more like Jamie Presley. Looks more like Joy than it does the actual actress that's playing her. So that's probably why the confusion. But I'm going to have to go watch
that
movie
smile.
Now. Right. And that crazy look in her eye. Like, you never know what she's going to do next, you know?
Well, I wouldn't want to take on Joy or Harley Quinn.
Right. Well, that's awesome. Well, I know that you're probably busy with four kids, but tell us what else you got on your mind real quick, and then I'll let you go. And any major events you got going on or anything you want to know about us or anything that you were planning on talking about that you didn't get a chance to mention?
Well, just to recap, the Million Mohawks Challenge, the hashtag 1 Million Mohawks, spike your hair up, start the conversations about your mohawk and talk about the brain beneath it. And then ReneeBeezy.com and her spoken word art is really gaining some momentum here in the Midwest and looking to expand and possibly go on the road at some point. So if you are a poet or you would like to be a poet, it's a great platform for that. Also, if you any freestyle rap, and even there's some musical stuff that's involved with that too. And I am, I guess, for lack of a better word, I'm hiring for Siren Joan and the amazing Doom Raptors. So hit me up for that. So I think that's about all I got. Just to recap.
What the hell is a Doom Raptor?
A Doom Raptor? Like a raptor? I don't know. If you ever met a Velociraptor, I'm thinking you're pretty doomed. So.
Oh, I thought you said a Doom Raptor. I thought like a Dewclaw. And I was thinking, okay, is that one I got you. I got
no,
you.
Doom. D-O-O-M.
I got you. That's awesome. Because we were actually on the show I do on Saturday nights, we were actually talking about the NFL draft. And Myles Garrett, the player that was drafted number one, we were laughing about how here's this guy that's set to make millions and to be, you know, the face of the Browns organization in football. And when they asked him what he's interested in, he brought up dinosaurs, and the Velociraptor actually made his list of the top five most amazing dinosaurs. So I thought that was pretty crazy that they're putting their hopes and dreams in a 22-year-old kid who still plays with dinosaurs. But It's those creative minds that usually...
I would still play with dinosaurs. I'm 32.
But you have four kids. That's a little bit different. I still find myself
singing. Oh, right, yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Yep,
bit.
I play with the kids, with the dinosaurs. Yeah, that's what I do. We'll say that.
That's awesome. So do you do freestyle rap, too, or is that something separate?
Oh, God, no. Oh, God, no. No, that would be a train wreck. You know? Well, I have a friend who does, and she's kind of in the closet about it. But I've actually heard some of the stuff that she's recorded because I was blessed enough for her to share it with me, and she's like really good. And I wrote something in a song, and I'm like, you know, this would be really, I think it would be a lot better with a rap thing. So here I am trying to explain to her how it was a disaster. She's just looking at me. She's like, yeah, honey, that's just not your thing. You stick to singing. I'm like, good. I'm good with that. I know. I always would
that's
say,
awesome.
What? Rappy's not that great. You just talk fast to a beat. It's not bad. There's more involved. I don't know what the magic trick is, but I don't have it. It's not a gift
that
exactly. possess.
Right. I actually know quite a few people that do it, and it takes a lot of skill. Maybe one of the hardest things to put together because not only are it's basically poetry, but it's poetry set to, you know, a rhythm, and then also you have to
mm-hmm.
find the right beats to bring it out. So it's I know a lot of people like to make fun of it, but it's actually a pretty intricate art. But I wanted to thank you for coming on. And I don't know if anybody else caught this about last thing I want to mention before I let you go about Harley Quinn, but it actually her name actually comes from the word Harlequin, which is a mute character
yep.
in traditional pantomime that's typically masked and dressed in a diamond pattern costume. And it kept when I was saying the word Harley Quinn in my head, I kept thinking of that. And I was wondering, I wonder if they stole it from that, and they definitely did. So, but hey,
they
Patty,
most
thank
certainly
you so
did
much for coming on. Thank you so much for coming on, and that was a very fun show to do. I like it when we just have relaxed and just kind of banter back and forth about whatever's on your mind, and I appreciate you doing that for me. And thank you for reminding us about mental illness and how serious it can be, because I know that even though it's something we bring up every once in a while, there's people that actually deal with it on a daily basis, and it can be something that's imprisoning and paralyzing to them, and I hope that we remember to keep it on the forefront, and thank you for helping us do that, and we will do what we can to support the Million Mohawks, is that what it's called?
Yep, 1 million Mohawks for mental health.
1 million Mohawks, and hopefully we can talk to you again soon.
Absolutely, I'll come anytime.
All right, well, thank you so much, and once again, that was Patty Heffernan, very interesting conversation there about everything from zombies and comic books and all that to very serious issues that everyone deals with, like mental illness, and we want to make sure that we bring awareness to that, because like she brought up, it's 1 in 4 people. That means that, you know, if you're at a restaurant or at church or at school or at work, you're probably rubbing shoulders with 3 or 4, maybe even more people at a time that are dealing with this serious issue. And, you know, most likely they're fighting just to appear normal in a world that is constantly bombarding them. I meant to bring up when I was talking to her that I have a daughter with severe autism, and I know that's those are two different subjects, but it's something that she battles with. The outside forces. So I think it's a great thing to keep on our minds and to help always trying to remember to combat, and at the same time while we're fighting the illness, to protect and care for the people that are dealing with the issue. So that was a very entertaining conversation. With the children that I have, I was never much into comic books myself, but with the children I have, I'm learning to figure all that out, and learning that I'm actually very into X-Men. Not so much the other ones necessarily. They do intrigue me just because my son loves them so much, and he tells me every day about Martian Manhunter and and all these other guys I never even knew existed. But, yeah, like I said, I'm really enjoying what we've watched with the X-Men, and now excited to see what Wonder Woman has to offer, because I think it's an amazing thing that we're starting to in this society, and it seems like, not to get too politically involved, but if you look back in time when President Obama took office, and it's not to push either political party or any political side, because I'm not about that at all. Those of you that know me know that I don't even vote, not because I don't have an opinion, but because I don't want to interfere with other people's opinion, because I prefer to share love, not controversy in the world. But I've noticed that once he took over, it became easier for people to express their opinions and to not feel attacked. And I'm very happy for that, because now I see, like I mentioned earlier, women being able to be involved in sports without a lot of judgment, you know, and we've seen, you know, just since the time he was elected, we've seen marriage be okay for everyone, not just for certain individuals, not just for people that support the hierarchy of this country, but for anyone. Anyone that is in love, in my opinion, should have the right to get married under at least some realism, you know, realistic expectations. But I think that that's become a beautiful thing for this country. We're starting to be open to everything and not judging. And not only are people, is it okay to be you, but people can do it without getting attacks from other sides. So I think it's a beautiful thing, and excited to see where this all goes. But, yeah, I do appreciate you listening in. We have one more segment coming up in about 5 minutes. We have Nate Nichols, who is an actor in Alaska. He lives in Anchorage, I believe, still. And he came out with a movie not that long ago, a few years ago, actually, probably now. And a fun and exciting comedy from up north. And now he's working on another one. He's going to tell us a little bit about it. He's going to tell us how we can help support them in getting it going, launching it a little bit, all that kind of stuff. Excited to hear about that. And knowing Nathan, he's always got something exciting up his sleeve that he can entertain us with. So I'm looking forward to that. But I just want to tell you, remind you a little bit. I didn't get a chance in the beginning of the show because we jumped right in with Don Dupree. But Rivalry Radio and the Rivalry Network are really growing. We started out as just one Facebook group about basketball called Everything Hoops. And from there, I saw that I really enjoyed starting groups for certain teams and getting people involved in their team and their sport and, you know, talking about all that kind of stuff. And all of a sudden, it just started growing. And I realized that I not only enjoyed doing it, but I had an obsession for it. And then it grew into me starting to write a little bit more, and I started a writer's group that's had various names. I believe we're locked in now on RivalryNetwork1.com. So if you're into sports, especially because that's where the majority of the writing is right now, RivalryNetwork1.com is our website. But I'm also starting to write a lot more on the entertainment side. I do music reviews. I've actually written even about grilling corn on the cob, yeah, because cooking is something that I really enjoy doing as well. I've written about my favorite movie directors, and I've written about famous celebrities that have passed away. Just anything that pops into my mind. I've written about bands and musicians and that kind of stuff. So anything that pops into my mind. We also have a few different people that write lifestyle things. A good friend of mine, Alicia Salas, writes about her children and parenting and that kind of thing. So if you are interested in reading, like I said, about sports, entertainment, any of that kind of stuff, and you just want a new perspective on it, RivalryNetwork1.com. We also have, along with this radio show, we're sponsored by Rivalry Radio and the Rivalry Network, and we have a show on Monday. It's a sports show called The Flip Side. We started out just talking about mainly about social issues in sports, and it's Mike and Rich, Michael Eccleston and Richard Wuerl, And they Michael is very much into baseball. They're both big fans of football. They both get into hockey and all that. So very interesting. Richard's a big fan of wrestling. So, yeah, all kinds of different topics in. They have tons of different guests. They're establishing relationships with a lot of different people on there. So a very, very interesting show, becoming more and more popular every time it's aired. And I believe that is 7 o'clock to 9 o'clock Eastern time. I've actually been on there a time or two talking with them, and I think you'll really enjoy it. Tuesdays, just because of scheduling reasons, we have a show at 3 o'clock Eastern time until 5 o'clock Eastern time. And it's with myself and two-time award-winning my co-host, Mark Kelly, who is actually also a researcher for ESPN. So very interesting show. Mark is so knowledgeable. I call him a walking encyclopedia, because he can bring up just about any sports event, and he'll be telling me what color shirts the announcers were wearing and all this kind of stuff. So the guy... Yeah, knows a little bit about everything, about just about every sport, very knowledgeable, very passionate about it, and, knows statistics better than anyone I've ever met by far. So, and that is, I know that we started out just calling it Rivalry Radio because we thought it was going to be the only show, but now Rivalry Radio is the network name for all these different shows, and I've changed the name to just Rivalry Sports, because it seems to make sense that way. And on Wednesday nights, we have the Shit Show with the Good Fathers. And that's exactly pretty much what that show is, a variety of different things, addressing every kind of issue, coming at it hard, but a couple of really great guys doing it. And they actually, it's kind of cool because they actually have the show set up around bedtime for their children, which shows what good fathers they really are, and they are nap time. And they discuss all kinds of different topics. Also big fans of the WWE. So if you're interested in that, that's a good place to go. Day nights, Mark Kelly has been traveling a little bit, but when he finds his feet firmly planted, he's doing baseball on Thursday nights, and he's had on some pretty great guests already. And he plans on doing more of that in the future until we find a permanent co-host for him, if we happen to do so. Otherwise, he'll probably just keep doing it the way we are doing it right now. Friday night is Peter Wiseman's Entertainment Frenzy. I've really enjoyed doing this because I've met so many different people. I was trying to figure out when I actually started. I believe it was end of January or beginning of February. And all the different amazing people I've had on, I've had actors and comedians and models and other podcast hosts, you name it. I've had them on, baseball players and fitness enthusiasts. And like I said, it's gone everywhere from people that have been on TV to people that just have a passion about doing their thing. And that's what makes it exciting for me. To me, it's more, even more than introducing them to you. I love learning. I love learning about other people's fashions, and that's what we are doing here on quite a consistent basis. So feel free to contact me if you are interested in that. You can go to Peter Wiseman on Facebook. You can go to, I believe it is at EP Wiseman, and that's my personal writing page. You can send me a message on there, or you can just DM me on my Facebook page, or send a message to any of the groups, and we will contact you about being on the show or any other involvement you would like to have. So, just excited about where this is going. And then the last show I forgot to mention is Peter and Kelly's Cocktail Hour, and that one is actually starting to get a lot of traction. Kelly, if you haven't heard her on any of her shows or on Peter and Kelly's Cocktail Hour, she is absolutely hilarious, very funny, very passionate, very opinionated, but also always very, very sincere, and that's what I appreciate about that. So Feel free to check that one out too. That one's just an hour long. We start at 8 o'clock Eastern time and end at 9 o'clock. But I appreciate your involvement. Appreciate you being a part of all this. We just started a website. I just launched the website, rivalrynetwork1.com. Go on there and check out. We have the main page right now, and I'm working on changing it, but I wanted the blog to be the first page so everybody can see that's our focus, and that's what we're trying to get out there. We have a lot of passionate writers and trying to build that constantly. We also have the second page is the Rivalry Radio page, and if you look down, you'll see a link. They're rectangles, but it's a link to all of the different shows that we have, and if you click on them, it takes you directly to the latest episode of the show. The only problem with that is I've been busy this week and haven't got that quite updated, but it'll take you to the show and you can find the latest episode. Like I said, all of the different shows that I listed are there, and you just click on one of the rectangles, the colored rectangles, and it'll take you right to the show. Also, the logo, you'll see Rivalry Radio, come get you some. That is for the logo for Rivalry Radio, and if you click on that, it'll actually take you to our Facebook group, Rivalry Radio Interactive, which is a group that I set up for people to interact with the show as it's live. So click on that picture, and it'll take you there. The next page is actually meet our staff, anybody that writes or has any involvement with the show is on there. And, some very amazing people. You're going to like them all. If you are interested, like I said, contact me, and you can add your picture to the page, either writing for us or on the radio. We always have something that you can get involved in. The next page is the Rivalry Network Sports Lounge. Basically what I have on there, the top picture is a link to Rivalry Network Sports Lounge. You click on that, and it's a group with people talking about sports and all that kind of stuff. And below that, we have different links to the other groups. We have the NFL Lounge, Rivalry Network NFL Lounge, NBA Lounge, MLB Lounge, and NHL Lounge. And like I said, when I first got started, those were the ones that I really focused on. I thought it would be fun to have a group for all the major sports and for people to talk about them. The NFL group has actually grown fairly large. I believe we almost have 6,000 members in there. NBA, I believe, is flirting around the 1,000-member mark. Major leagues right around there, too. The NHL is a little bit smaller, but a very active group. Passionate fans in there, so if you want to jump into any of those, just let me know or find them on Facebook at Rivalry Network NFL Lounge. They'll pop up. Just shoot a request and we will get you involved as soon as possible. The other one, major ones we have are the WWE Lounge. That is getting very, very big. A lot of fans interested in that, very active. A smaller group, but very active. And the Rivalry Network USC Lounge, probably the most active group that we have right there. Very passionate fans of the UFC Lounge, and any of you that know Mary McHugh, she's a good friend of mine, and she's constantly updating that, especially when there's anything involving Holly Holm or Ronda Rousey. She gets pretty excited about those events and keeps them updated very well. And then I have all 32 NFL teams. So you just go to pick your favorite team, click on them, and it takes you directly to the page I just clicked on the Carolina Panthers. They have over, I believe it's 600 members, very active. Maria is constantly posting new things in there, keeping you guys up to date. She looks like she posts two or three things a day. And she actually helps me with quite a few of the different groups. Very passionate NFL fan. Something to be a part of. If you love your team and you're looking for other people that love your team as much as you do, it's a good place to go. And, yeah, I'm a huge NFL fan, so I've specialized in that. I have all 32 teams in there. So, yeah, check it out. It's pretty amazing. You're going to like it. Also, the other ones I have on there are the Golden State Warriors. I don't even know anymore how many members that one has in it because it seems like I get 20 or 30 requests a day. People trying to, it's just under 10,000 members. People constantly asking to get into that group. So actually just over 9,000 members. People constantly asking to get into that group. Obviously so since Golden State is in the finals and playing very, very good basketball. The other teams that I have on there, I believe, are the Pittsburgh Penguins, Manchester United, and the Chicago Cubs, four teams that are very, very popular right now. So, yeah, and if you have other favorites that you'd like, I have all kinds of different groups. And we also have the other page on there is Rivalry Network Entertainment Lounge. I started to get into the entertainment side as well. I'm a huge sports fan, but I also love the entertainment side. And I love movies and music, and I'm passionate about all that stuff. So I have one mate group called Culture and the Rivalry Network Culture and Entertainment Lounge. There's a link to that on this page, which is the sixth page on here. Culture and Entertainment Lounge, Culinary Lounge, Movies and TV, Musicians, Comedians, Models and Actors, Photographers, so you can go to any of those groups just by clicking on the links. Below them, we actually have some models that have been working hand-in-hand with Rivalry Network, and you'll find their pictures underneath. If you click on the pictures, you go to the page that I created for them a little bit, and you can find some pretty cool stuff there too. So, check it out. Yeah, I think you'll love it. And the website is going to constantly be growing as I have time to work on it. I have plenty of ideas for it. I've actually been working with someone who's giving me ideas about how to make it even better. And I'm really excited about that because if you've been following along, and if you're listening to the show, you probably saw the link on one of my pages. And if you've been following along with any of the pages, you probably know that Rivalry Network is growing all the time. Like I said, it started out as one little tiny Facebook group, and now we have our fingers in almost everything out there, and sometimes even more than I remember because I'm constantly building. So, if you check into any of that and just follow along, you'll find out that we are growing all the time. And don't plan on stopping anytime soon. So feel free to join in with that and become a part of it. We do have one more guest that we're waiting on to join us. I haven't heard from him yet, and I have been known, especially since I try to do everything around the Eastern time zone, and I have been known to mess up the time, especially when I'm trying to count backwards, because sometimes I count backwards from Central Time instead of Eastern. I don't think I did that with him, but we will find out what happened, and I'll let you know. Hopefully we can reschedule with him, because I think you'll enjoy hearing Nate Nichols. He has always tremendous stories, very entertaining person to talk to, and he's got a couple. One movie he just did a few years back, another movie that he's working on here in the near future. So if you're interested in that, he will most likely be on very, very soon. But I just wanted to thank you all so much for being a part of Rivalry Radio and Rivalry Sports and Entertainment and all the different groups that we have. And we plan on continuing to grow into the future. We'd love to hear your advice and your feedback. That's actually a link I could put on the website. But like I told you, you can find us at any time at Rivalry Network 1, at Twitter, all that kind of stuff. But, I just want to tell you all, thank you for joining us. I am going to end the show for now. We will be back on I believe the next show on Rivalry Network is Monday with the flip side, and we will go from there. Thank you for listening. Thank you for all your time, and we will talk to you soon.